Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Hello, Packers fans. Welcome to the Green 19 podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined once again by Tom Silverstein, Ryan Wood, reporters for PackersNews.com. They're at Lambeau Field getting ready for a pretty big battle for the Packers against the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota. Their playoff hopes hinging on these last two games. And the story right now, though, it's kind of off the field, but also very much on the field. With what has happened coming into the week, on Wednesday we learned that Jaire Alexander, the cornerback who finally came back from injury in that game against the Carolina Panthers, will be missing this game. He is on a one-game suspension issued by the team for conduct detrimental to the team. We talked a little bit about the coin toss and the sort of randomness around him sort of inviting himself on the field, calling tails. It was a whole thing. And apparently that was one of many things that led to this decision. So that's obviously where I want to start. We'll talk about the Vikings quarterback situation. They're not going to have TJ Hockenson now with a major injury. That's a big deal, I think, for the Packers. But we got to start with Jaire. Tom, we talked about this. We talked about this after the game and made note of it. I mean, it wasn't a, you know, sort of a story to just laugh off. But at the same time, I don't think we thought, or at least I didn't think this was coming. Did you see this as a big enough deal that this would be the action that the Packers would be taking? This did catch me off guard, but at the same time, it kind of makes sense when you sort of, and you wrote all about it at PackersNews.com, what transpired. I mean, it was pretty brazen for him to do what he did, and it almost cost them. And it's understandable, I guess, that there would be some repercussions. So when you heard about this, what went through your head?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I was surprised. I didn't expect him to be suspended, but I did wonder, you know, this seemed to be pushing the envelope with him. You know, he's kind of, you know, it's all kind of, he's an independent spirit and different kind of guy, and everybody, you know, kind of embraces that. But this was kind of dumping on his teammates, even, to go out and you know, take part in the coin flip when really Quay Walker was the defensive captain. And so, you know, I don't know whether he asked those guys whether he could go out there or what, but it really doesn't matter. You know, is it really that important that you're a captain in your hometown? You know, you should be a captain when you earn it. And, you know, what you want to do when you're in your hometown is play the very best game you could possibly play. And then people will be talking about you, not after a coin flip. So I'm not surprised. I mean, I think there's some other things that were involved in that. And I think they had kind of a come to Jesus meeting on Wednesday. And it, you know, it was about being a good teammate and following the rules and let's clear the air on whatever it is that you're trying to do. And this is how we see it. So we'll see. I don't know how the rest of it will play out. You know, he's out of the facility for the whole week other than to get rehab. So his locker's like empty. And I don't, you know, the players aren't talking about it, which kind of surprises me. I thought you'd see, no, I didn't think, but I would think you'd have some veterans who stand up and say, hey, rules are rules and everybody has to abide by them and we love him, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there are rules and they decided a suspension was the best way to handle it. And so that's, it just seems like everybody's ignoring it. And that's a weird thing to me.
Ryan, I kind of want some background on what you know about how these captains' decisions work, because what Tom says sort of relitigates for me what happened last year when they decided not to have captains. And before that, when Alexander was upset that he wasn't named a season-long captain, you know, it sort of seems like maybe that's connected. So I'd be curious to know what you know about that process, and also if there are specific things, because you wrote about this for PackersNews.com when he was suspended, if there are other things you think specifically built up to this that you know about, or that are out there, are public knowledge, or if it's really just maybe behind the scenes stuff that we think has sort of accumulated over time.
Yeah, as far as the captain's things go, because this is the NFL's youngest roster, Matt LaFleur deviated from his normal protocol and decided not to have permanent season-long captains this year. They've been going with a week-to-week rotation, and it's determined on the week. And sometimes you'll see guys out there that represent the team for the coin flip that aren't their most prominent players on paper. Sometimes there'll be a player that played for the opponent at some point in their career. Sometimes it's whoever Matt LaFleur feels should be representative of the team for that week before the kickoff. And so that's been different. But everything else when it comes to Jaire Alexander, the three words that go through my mind is pattern of behavior. From a common sense standpoint, and Matt LaFleur said this himself, he said it's never one thing. When asked if this was a culmination or strictly about what happened Sunday, he said it's never one thing. But from a common sense standpoint, there's no way that this was a one-game suspension, especially at this time of year, only for the coin toss. It's not logical. So it's been a pattern of behavior. This is not the first time Jaire Alexander has publicly said that he was disappointed with how captains – not being a captain. When he – a couple years ago, he was a captain. And then the next season, they took a vote as a team, as they usually do, not this season, but usually in the past. And he was not selected by his teammates as a captain. And he acknowledged that he was disappointed. He took it personal that he wasn't a captain then. So this is not the first time. We also know, as Tom said, he's kind of a unique guy. He's a guy that, you know, he's the one player in the locker room that when he has his weekly media session, which, by the way, he doesn't do every week, as is required by his NFL contract for all players, that you at least speak once a week. He hasn't done it every week. But when he does do it, he's the one guy in the locker room who regularly wears swag. He'll have the wrestle championship belts and the silly glasses and all this, which, you know, whatever. That's entertainment, right? But it is very much, hey, look at me. It's very individualistic. And so when you have the same player go out and, as I think Spoon put it spot on, kind of give a thumbs down to his teammates, like he's not voted as a captain. He's not selected or appointed as a captain this week. Three other players were. He's going to go out there and join them anyway. That's very individualistic. The other thing I know Drew Eyer from this team was before New York when he actually did give an interview. And he said, I'm not going to call myself a prophet or anything, but I called it. I said we'd win out. A couple weeks before, he was asked, how do you feel about the team the rest of the season when things were looking bleak? And he said, I think we're going to win out. And then he drew attention to that comment before New York. Again, very individualistic, not going to call myself a prophet, but I called it. And it was taken very much as he's calling a guaranteeing a victory against the Giants this week. The Packers went on and lost their next two games. So usually players don't draw that kind of attention to themselves when they're not playing. He's missed before Sunday. He missed six straight games with a shoulder injury. Matt LaFleur made clear the injury, a miscalculation, Matt LaFleur said, on the team's part to not put him on injured reserve, which would cost him four games instead of six games that he ended up missing. That the suspension had nothing to do with that miscalculation, with the fact that he spent 6 weeks on the sideline when he was expected to miss shorter time, had nothing to do with that. But there's a pattern of behavior when it comes to individualistic behavior.
Tom, you said something last week that's sticking out in my mind about how as long as the play outshines the, I guess, weirdness, for lack of a better term, he's still going to be out there. And this is a really big matchup. I mean, it's no secret. Justin Jefferson is, you know, going to be one of the biggest receiving threats they face all year. And having Jaire Alexander would be a huge asset there. But maybe the part of the calculation is that we kind of reached that threshold where they had to do something, or the play wasn't matching it either. You know, it's not like the secondary had a marvelous week against Carolina. And we've spoken before about how the Valentine, you know, secondary was working. It was having some success. So I don't know if this is an on the, if on the field is calculated at all in this. I'm certain the Packers would say no, but there's also that aspect. Maybe that's the cynical part of me saying, I think they could maybe afford to do it now, despite the matchup that's ahead. What do you think about that?
Well, to me, it was LaFleur had to make a decision, and I think Gutekunst helped him make it. You know, if you are going to show authority in your locker room and people are going to have any respect for you, if they're going to break the rules, you've got to do something about it. And what he did was a big, you know, thumbing his nose at LaFleur and whoever else. And that's not a good look. And it's especially when your players are going to be, you know, it's a national story. And then your players are looking at you like, okay, you know, let's see what happens with this. And, you know, as a coach, you have to judge, is the player super popular and is everybody going to turn on you, the coach? Or do you need to make a statement about, you know, behavior? And I think, you know, I think there's a couple things. I think one, LaFleur needed to make that statement. And the other is maybe they want to see whether they can survive without him. And then they'll see what happens in the off season. So, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they go up against Justin Jefferson and play Carrington Valentine and Eric Stokes there and see whether they got enough to move on without Jair Alexander, because I don't know. I mean, they LaFleur went out of his way to say the relationship is, you know, repaired and looking good and they can't wait for him, but there's still some season left. And if I'm them, I would be considering what the future might look like. And do I have enough to move on from him?
Ryan, how do you think the Packers handle Justin Jefferson now without Alexander? You know, some of this is the quarterback is going to be Jaren Hall, we believe at this point. So, you know, somebody's got to throw it to him. And it's an adventure for Minnesota on that front and has been all year. But this is obviously a big, big battle and a really tough individual matchup here. Do you think the Packers have the wherewithal to at least keep him in check, to keep him from going off on them in this game?
How they handle him? Not well. I expect them to handle Justin Jefferson without Jair Alexander. We saw it last year. And now Jair Alexander this year has been banged up, and we don't know if it would repeat itself, but we saw it last year. In the week one, Justin Jefferson had, what, 9 catches, almost 200 yards, 2 touchdowns without Jair Alexander getting the bulk of coverage responsibility. Mm-hmm. Later in the season, they come to Lambeau Field. Jair Alexander gets the bulk of coverage responsibility, and Justin Jefferson has 1 catch for 15 yards. It was a night and day difference. When the Vikings came to Lambeau Field this year, they had Jair Alexander. They didn't have Justin Jefferson. He was on IR. Now it's the inverse. There's Justin Jefferson. I don't care who's throwing to him. It's going to be a long day. I imagine it's going to be a lot of zone. They really need to get pressure on Jaren Hall and get him rattled, affect the quarterback, because kind of like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game when they couldn't cover anybody on the back end and they had 5 sacks on Baker Mayfield, and if they wanted an incompletion, you basically had to get a sack. It sure seems like it's going to be that kind of game again. What's their best pass defense? Their pass rush. It's not – you can't just sit back and let – Justin Jefferson run wide open through the secondary. You've got to get after the quarterback this week. And if you don't, you got to have a quick play clock. And if you don't, you're dead. It's not going to look pretty.
Tom, what do you know about Jaren Hall? I confess to knowing very little. I mean, Nick Mullins had a crazy week passing the ball last week, but great yardage count, but 4 interceptions. And they just had to make a change. You know, Hall came in later in that game and is now going to be the starter. Do you know anything about him and how he might match up against the Green Bay Packers?
Well, I mean, I know he's from BYU, and BYU always has really pretty fundamentally sound quarterbacks. Maybe Zach Wilson you know, excluded. But he had the one game where he came in. Well, he came in for Kirk Cousins in the game against the Packers and really didn't have much of a chance to do anything. And he played for a little bit, and didn't Dobbs replace him? I think he suffered a concussion against Atlanta, and then Dobbs came in and, you know, threw like 17 touchdowns or something like that. So I think he was doing pretty well against Atlanta when he got hurt. At this point, they have to do something different. I mean, Nick Mullins has thrown 6 interceptions in 2 games. Even if he threw for 411 yards on Sunday, he was just chucking it up. And, you know, Jefferson did everything he could to keep them in the game. But, you know, you can't have a quarterback turning it over like that. So I think Hall will probably be you know, more protective of the ball. And given the way these things have gone for the Packers, he'll probably be the NFC player of the week on Monday.
Oh, no.
That's pattern of behavior as well, Spoon.
Ryan, what about the Packers, the players that they'll have available? We can go to the offensive side. I know that Christian Watson and Dontavian Wicks did not practice again on Thursday. That bodes poorly, particularly for Watson. I don't know if you have a sense on either one of those guys. You know, Jaden Hall is back, so like they're at least getting maybe a little bit healthier. I don't know, but Jaden Reed. What's the sense of the guys that are going to be available for the Packers on Sunday?
You know, I had a sense yesterday with Christian Watson not practicing but stretching with the helmet that he might really have a chance to play this week. You know, his first hamstring injury this season was 3 games. This one, he's missed 3 games. If there's ever a week that you put him out there, even if he's not 100%, it'd be this week. You got to win this game, and having Christian Watson's huge. I don't know, but there's a fine line to that, right? If he can't protect himself, he can't protect himself. You don't play no matter who or what you're playing for. Matt LaFleur said that Friday's practice is going to be important, that they probably need to practice Friday, both Christian Watson and Dontavian Wicks, in order to play. So all eyes are going to be on that. But it's hard to get a gauge before Friday's practice. But if there's ever a week that you got to have them on the field, this is essentially a playoff game. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they both were on the field. I don't have a good feel until Friday.
The Vikings will be banged up too. TJ Hockenson lost for a long period of time with ACL MCL injury last week. On the surface, that's a big deal, especially for, I guess, historically, it seems like tight ends, especially in the NFC North, have had big games against the Packers. So that's one matchup they don't have to worry about. Tom, do you think that's a big deal? Because I could see any tight end having a strong, you know, a strong game based on how they scheme it. Doesn't really matter if it's a great tight end or not, but TJ Hockenson was a pretty good tight end. So do you see that as a maybe a bit of a game changer for the Packers?
Well, it is a big deal. I don't know if it's a game changer, but it's a big deal. I mean, he's arguably going to be the all-pro tight end in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy's got, 95 catches or something like that? He's the real deal, and he can block, and you know, he will punish you for putting too much energy into stopping Justin Jefferson. So that is a very big deal for him not to be there. And I know Jordan Addison is banged up a little bit too. Right. That could affect how they play it as well. But you take a guy like that out, and it you can't help but think it's going to hurt their offense. Where I think it could really affect them is in pass protection and their run game. So, you know, they have to figure out, you know, can they keep a guy in? Do they keep a tight end in and try to, you know, block the Packers' pass rush? Or, you know, with Hockenson, he could stay in and block, or he could release and really hurt you down the field if you rush too many guys. So I think that's where maybe it's a little bit of an advantage. Like the Packers might be able to dictate a little bit more because he's gone. So we'll see. You know, Kevin O'Connell's pretty good at coming up with different ways of different formations, different personnel sets. And so without Hockenson, I think we will see some different looks.
Speaking of defending tight ends, just thinking about linebackers, knowing Devondre Campbell has been a little dinged up, and I'm guessing he won't play either. But I'm curious, Ryan, just a progress report on where you think Quay Walker is at this point, coming toward the end of his second full season in the NFL. There are times, I mean, he obviously he's trusted by the defensive coaches. He's got a big responsibility on that defense. It seems like it's pretty up and down. You know, if you listen to the After Further Review podcast, you hear a lot of, you know, there are things Quay Walker could work on, I suppose. But what have you seen from him? Do you feel like he still has potential to be a really great linebacker in the NFL? Is it how far away is he from that at this point? Just give me a sense of where you think he's at.
Yeah, he's probably the second most important player on their defense from week to week. Now, you could argue Jair Alexander is, but it's either Quay Walker or Jair Alexander behind Rashawn Gary. You know, he had such a great start to his season. The pick six in Chicago week one, dropped an interception week two, but certainly looked like he was going to make strides this season as a playmaking inside linebacker, which is really – To be a superstar at that position, you got to make big plays. That's what separates the top of that position in the league to everyone else. That hasn't been there. But I think he still has the athletic profile, the potential, the talent. He's a young guy to develop into that. That's going to ultimately be the deciding factor, though. As far as, you know, there's a big difference in their run defense when they have Quay Walker on the field and when they don't. His athleticism and his range is almost night and day. They've given up 200 yards four games this season, and their past two that they've given up 200 yards, they didn't have Quay Walker on the field. So that's cause and correlation, right? There's a reason for that. So having him out there, I do think, makes a big difference. He's awfully important to that defense. That's just, to me, that the next step that he has to take. Can he be a playmaking inside linebacker that really, when you look at the all-pro list, those guys make big plays, and we haven't seen that yet from Quay Walker.
Tom, I'm going to circle back and talk more about the defense as a whole again. With this Alexander issue in there as well, we've obviously spent a lot of time talking about Joe Barry, the coordination, the defense as a whole. You know, there is some thought here that this is just kind of a disaster at this point, you know, between the struggles they've had and now the discipline issues. Does it feel that way? Does it feel like this is a little bit of a rudderless ship, or, you know, is the Alexander thing, does that just need to be completely separate from the struggles that they've had on the field and sort of treated just as two isolated incidents in separate silos?
No, I think it's all part of the defensive mess that they've got. Joe Barry will pay the ultimate price for what's happened this year on defense. Mm-hmm. And you know, rightly so. It's just going to be the right move. But he is by far not the only problem with the defense. I mean, I think they've got some players who are not good fits in certain areas. You know, you talk about Quay Walker, and he's a dynamic guy, sideline to sideline. He's tough, he's physical, but you put him in zone coverage and he is lost. He is like a lost puppy. He mm-hmm. does not know how to play zone. I don't think he ever did in college. I think they just told him go run with the tight end or something like that. And you see it game after game that he has these problems. And this is where your defensive coordinator's got to come in and say, all right, well, Quay Walker's really good, but I don't know, let's find another option. You know, if we're going to play zone, you know, let's think about some third downs where we bring in another safety, or maybe play Eric Wilson, who can run like crazy. I mean, he's extremely fast, smaller linebacker for coverage. Things like that. It's like you have these weaknesses in your players, and then you've got to figure out the way to mitigate that. And often that's with different personnel groupings. Now, the Packers also, I think it's like a rudderless unit. They don't have somebody who's dynamic and saying, hey, this is the way stuff has to go. I think they all just kind of, you know, meander along in the locker room. I think they do try to do their jobs. They try to play to the best that they can. But I don't think there's a like a bell cow guy who is out there saying, look, you guys, you know, you can't keep making the same mistakes. This is on you. You know, we can't blame everything on Joe Barry. I don't think they have that kind of player. They don't have like a Tremont Williams. They don't have a Charles Woodson. Guys who can speak when, you know, Julius Peppers was another. He didn't talk a lot, but when he did talk, you know, people really listened. And I don't think they have anybody like that. And that's, they're not a completely young defense. They just don't have those kind of guys.
They don't have a Rasul Douglas. Yeah. Rasul Douglas was that guy for them. I forget the game. I wish I could offhand. I don't know if you remember the game right before – the game before he was traded, who they lost to. He's in the middle of their losing streak. That's why he was traded, because Ryan Gutekunst thought this would be a rebuilding year. Might as well get a third-round pick. But in the locker room immediately after his last game here, it must have been six guys that came up to his locker as Rasul Douglas was sitting at his locker. And it wasn't just defense. Dontavian Wicks was one of them. Elton Jenkins came up. Six guys, roughly, came up to Rasul Douglas's locker, and he was having conversations with each of them. And based on his public comments the weeks before he was traded, it's pretty easy to kind of imagine what those conversations were. How do we fix this? What's going wrong? Let's get on the same page. There's no one else like that in this locker room. So they lost that with Rasul Douglas.
I got a couple questions that are going to be a little bit bigger than this game. But before I get to that, Ryan, I'm going to come back to you. If there's anything else you want to highlight in this for this particular Vikings game, if there's something that you think maybe it's on the offensive side of the ball, maybe Aaron Jones getting healthy is a chance to be an X factor here. But just anything else that we haven't discussed that you are really paying attention to when you go to Minnesota.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say, is Aaron Jones being healthy is huge in this game, because their best pass defense is going to be rushing the quarterback. But short of that, their second best pass defense is going to be running the ball and controlling the clock. And having Aaron Jones enables that. We saw just how big of a difference he can make in that offense in Carolina. Having him healthy and fresh this time of year, it's been a really frustrating year for Aaron Jones. You know, he's 29 years old now. He's an old running back. Old running backs break down. He's broken down. But to have him healthy and fresh now, it's very significant, because I don't see them covering Justin Jefferson on Sunday night. I just don't see it happening. So if you know that going in, we're going to have problems here. One, you rush the passer, but you got to run the ball. I think it's got to be a big game for Aaron Jones.
Tom, I'll pose the same question to you. If there's any other storyline that you are particularly paying attention to as the Packers try to keep their playoff hopes alive.
I think it's got to be a big passing day too. I think Jordan Love's got to really spread his wings a little bit. You know, they're going to come after him, I assume. You know, Brian Flores blitzes a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think they like overwhelmed him the last time, but the offense just wasn't very good, and they're in a different place now. They really need Jaron Reed back. So if Reed can play, and if they can get Musgrave back, which I think is a real possibility, I think you'll see Jordan Love. You know, I think he could pass quite a bit in this game, and maybe just spread his wings a little bit more. It's tough that he doesn't have Wicks, because Wicks is really a reliable guy. But, you know, Bo Melton came through pretty well. Dobbs came through for him. And then if he's got that two tight ends, what I really want to see is how LaFleur uses those two tight ends, assuming Musgrave plays. To me, that's going to be the most interesting part about the entire game is, okay, what, how does he use two guys who can get open or proved that they can get open? And how often does he use them together? And how does he do that? So that's what I'm going to be looking at in particular. And, you know, I just expect Love not to be intimidated and to kind of go at a secondary that's a little bit banged up and probably playing three safeties like they do a lot. I think there's some room for him to do some damage.
All right, taking an even further step back, the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, announced its group of finalists on Wednesday night, and Julius Peppers is in the mix. He is one of the guys who's going. He's going to be one of the five inductees in this class of 2024. Jarry Evans, who played a year for the Packers as well, known mostly as a member of the New Orleans Saints. But Ryan, I wanted to ask you if you have any particular memories of Julius Peppers. I think your time in Green Bay intersects with Peppers playing, and he's going to be known as a Carolina Panther, maybe a Chicago Bear as well. But he did have, he had a few seasons in Green Bay. And my favorite thing about him is when they tried to run a play for him where he was an eligible receiver and dropped what would have been a touchdown. Nobody liked that play. I liked that play. I thought it was hilarious and I really wanted to see it. But what do you remember about his presence in Green Bay and kind of where he was at that point in his career?
That's a really interesting question. So the difference between being year one on an NFL beat and year 10 is pretty vast. In year one, they had Julius Peppers. In year one, you're kind of a little bit, right? I mean, it's it's new. And I'd covered the SEC, two SEC programs, and I'd been on major beats, but covering the NFL was always kind of, it's what I set out to do when I decided to be a sports writer. Of all the players that I've ever covered, there's only one, and I don't know year 10 if I'd still, I don't think I still have this type of effect on me, but there's only one that ever really put me in awe, and it wasn't Aaron Rodgers. I mean, some of the things Aaron Rodgers did were absolutely spectacular, obviously. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer for a reason, but the only player that I've ever covered that put me in awe is Julius Peppers, and it's just – I remember the first time standing next to him at his locker, and the guy played power forward at North Carolina. He was a big time basketball player as well. And my thought was, he's different. Like, humans aren't built like this, you know. And he's towering. He's chiseled muscle, like almost like a Greek god, right? That was kind of in my head. This dude is a different human being. So that's kind of my first impression of being around Julius Peppers and kind of that young phase of my career and just kind of being in awe. But as far as plays, he had, I think it was a pick six. Boone, I'm sure you remember too. You might correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was maybe week four of that 14 season. They had the Vikings. It was a Thursday night game. And I think that he intercepted the pass. I don't know if it was a pick six, but he had a good return. And for a guy of his size, he looked like a running back. It was unreal the way that he moved with the football in his hands. I mean, he was a playmaking defensive player, not as a corner or a safety, but as an edge rusher. That's rare. You don't see a lot of guys like that. Obviously he could rush the passer, had every quality you'd want as an all-time great pass rusher, but he was more than that. He was a playmaking edge rusher. That you don't see that a whole lot. So, yeah, when my career is all said and done, I'll say the one person that I ever covered, one player that kind of left me in awe was Julius Peppers.
Packers could have three Hall of Famers, technically, because if Jahri Evans goes in, Steve McMichael could also get voted in as a member of the Seniors Committee. He, of course, is primarily known as the Chicago Bear. Played one kind of unspectacular season in Green Bay, but it's possible they could have three guys on the Hall of Fame inductee list. Tom, I want to go back almost to Steve McMichael's era. I think that's 94, because I want to go back to 93. The Lambeau Leap turned 30 this past week. We wrote a lot about it, PackersNews.com. I know you've forged a great relationship with Leroy Butler over the years. He's on our site doing X's and O's with you every week. I don't know if you specifically remember that game. That was actually my first Packers game as a young lad. I 12 years old, sitting in that end zone, freezing my tail off against the Raiders. I was bitterly unhappy. I did not know he had jumped in the stands. I did not appreciate the moment because I wanted to get out of there as fast as possible. That was a big game for them in the playoff chase in 1993 for them to win against the Raiders. I don't know if you have any particular memories of that game or anything stands out about it. The other thing that I've kind of noticed is that we haven't seen a lot of Lambeau leaps. They're kind of, I don't know if we're like, they're going the way of the dinosaur, if they're fading a little bit. You see them here and there, but they're not as prevalent, I guess, as they used to be. So that's just one thing I've noticed. But if I say Lambeau Leap, I'm curious what your association is with that and with that moment back in 1993.
Yeah, I was there. Before I go into that, I wanted to give you my memory of Julius
Peppers. Peppers. Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the 2000 and 14 NFC Championship game at Seattle. When they had the chance to go to the Super Bowl. And Morgan Burnett picked off Russell Wilson across the middle, and he was headed for a touchdown. I'll never forget it. And Julius Peppers told him to get down and slide and give himself up, you know, because they thought that had, like, clinched the game. I'll never forget that. It was probably the worst move Julius Peppers ever made, because he would have been in a Super Bowl if Morgan Burnett had just taken that ball and gone. You know, if it had been Sam Shields, he would have run right through that stop sign and gone.
Or Jair Alexander, for that matter.
Yeah, or Jair Alexander. But Morgan Burnett wasn't thinking, and Peppers wasn't thinking either. And I mean, there's so many things cost them the game, but that would have put the game out of reach. And so that I'll always remember that. It was,
yeah,
quite the decision.
I believe that was Spoon, the No Moss single. Go ahead, Ryan.
Spoon, real quick. What I always kind of gathered from that moment was, yeah, if it was Sam Shields, maybe he runs through the stop sign. But on that defense, if it had been almost literally any other player that puts up the stop sign in that moment, Morgan Burnett doesn't slide. He goes. But that it was Julius Peppers, it was a tremendous reflection of the influence. As a guy didn't talk a lot, but the influence that he had on that defense. When Julius Peppers spoke, you listened. When he told you to do something, you did it. That was who he was.
And that's the one time he shouldn't have.
Yeah,
it's so true.
Ran right by him. Get out of my way. I'm going to the end zone.
Oh, no.
He didn't think that Brandon Bostic wasn't going to get the onside kick, but, you know.
Had to go wrong. A lot did.
But it would have changed Brandon Bostic's life. Trust me.
Yeah.
If he had gone in for that touchdown. As for the Lambeau Leap, yeah, I was there. And I'll never forget. The part I remember is it was just so cold. Mm-hmm. And the Raiders just didn't show up. You know, they got off the bus. And I'll never forget, I was sitting not far from Al Davis. And he sat in the press box. And kind of like Ron Wolf did. And he was so mad. He was just irate. I forgot what he said, but it was something about, you know, like trading everybody. You know, he just couldn't believe they didn't show up for this game. The cold, they didn't want to be there. And it was just, you know, a total blowout. I do remember Leroy jumping into the stands. I don't remember it being like a big deal for quite a while. I think it wasn't until Robert Brooks started doing it that it took off. But it was, you know, it was like the final, you know, they were piling on basically in points. The game was won already and they were just, you know, having fun. So, I do remember that. The thing I'll say about why you don't see the Lambeau Leap as much anymore is because of the rules they put in about how much time there is before you have to kick the extra point. So a lot of times if it's like a tight end, you know, he's got to get back on the extra point team. Yeah. And if they don't, they get a delay a game warning. And so some of those guys have decided not to do it. You know, Tucker Kraft, you would have thought he'd be the guy to go running in there, but he's got to be in there and block on the extra point. So I think that's some of it, why they don't do it as much. Maybe they don't like getting beer poured on them too.
Yeah. You know, oh, gross. Yeah.
Stays with you for the whole game. So
that's true.
But it was, you know, it was something that, you know, at the time it wasn't called the Lambeau Leap or anything like that. But, you know, I haven't talked to Leroy quite often. You know, it was really just something he did spur of the moment. I don't think he had thought about it. I don't think it was like something he had planned. I think it was just, hey, I just scored. I'm going. And, of course, the most interesting part was that Reggie White stepped out of bounds, and it should have been.
And the running back was down.
Is that official, Spoon? Because I'm honestly asking, because I've heard about this, right? I've seen the play. I can't tell on the play. So is that like official? Did he definitely step out?
I think he did. Yeah, I've looked at it a lot. It looked to me like he stepped out of bounds. Yeah. But you know who cares? I mean, he would have still done the leap. You know. And so it just became tradition from that point.
Yeah. Rich Ryman with a great story on that at PackersNews.com. These guys, Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, they've got it all covered for you up to this Minnesota game practice still this week. And then again, Sunday Night Football against the Minnesota Vikings, huge game, live blog that Tom will be running. Ryan Wood will be there. Pete Doherty, find it all at PackersNews.com. And thanks for tuning into this episode of the Green 19 podcast. We'll be back after that game. Happy New Year's, everyone. Enjoy the New Year's Eve celebration, hopefully with a Packers victory for you. And then we'll be back to discuss it. Take care, everybody.